Welcome to another ABC Radio National podcast. For more information, go to abc.net.au/rn.
Welcome to Lingua Franca. I'm Kate Bochner. This week, George Megalogenis on the words liberal and conservative. You may have heard in Radio National's Hindsight during April the excellent four-part series on the history of liberalism in Australia, which charted the shifting nature of the liberal impulse in Australian politics since Federation. How do we define liberalism in the Australian context, and how does it sit with the Liberal Party's social and political conservatism? The Menzies Research Centre, the Liberal Party's think tank, is devoted to the principles of individual liberty, free speech, competitive enterprise, limited government, and democracy. George Megalogenis is a senior writer for the Australian newspaper and author of The Longest Decade. He's a close observer of our current Prime Minister and his political antagonists on both sides of politics. Here's George Megalogenis.
If John Howard could meet Robert Menzies in a time tunnel, would the Prime Minister be greeted with an embrace or an upturned nose? Would Menzies, the nation's longest-serving leader and founder of the political party that has ruled us for 41 of the past 57 years, be a supporter of the Howard government? Might sound like a silly question to pose because there is so much of Menzies in Howard. Like Menzies, our second longest-serving Prime Minister is a cricket lover, a monarchist, and a leader who appears on occasion to be unashamedly behind the times. Both men are conservative in the sense that they are reluctant to change. Like Menzies, Howard was also a willing participant in a US war of choice, although like Vietnam, Iraq was a venture no true liberal or conservative would have embarked upon. But what binds Menzies and Howard above all else is that each man presided over an economy that became the envy of the developed world. Each man got to define their era because they had the luxury of talking to a contented populace. Yet the Liberal Party Prime Minister between Menzies and Howard in history's page, Malcolm Fraser, believes the two men would not see eye to eye. "It's a conservative party today," Fraser says. When Menzies named the Liberal Party, Fraser continues, he deliberately rejected the word conservative as inappropriate for Australia. He said this to us in an interview for the Australian newspaper in 2005. "We rejected conservatism, we rejected reaction," Fraser concluded. Fraser was Prime Minister for 8 turbulent years between 1975 and 1983. The collective memory records him as one of our least loved leaders because of his role in the dismissal of Gough Whitlam's Labor government. Yet somehow Fraser has become a latter-day darling of the centre-left. He has more in common with Whitlam nowadays than he does with his former colleague Howard, who had served as Treasurer in Fraser's government. Remember when Fraser and Whitlam shared the podium to campaign for the Republic in 1999? Sadly, that joint ticket didn't sway the public, and 55% said no to the Republican model on offer. Fraser draws the distinction between the terms liberal and conservative because he sees himself, not Howard, as the legitimate heir to Menzies. Fraser means for Howard to take the jibe personally, because he understands that Howard sees Menzies as a political hero. Fraser, if you think it through, talks in the same way that the old Bolsheviks would speak of Stalin in the 1920s, that he wasn't a true Leninist. Howard is, of course, no Stalin, and Menzies was no Lenin. But in democracy, as in dictatorship, leaders seek to identify their party with the people. The word liberal is contested in Australia because it is, as Fraser says, a consciously more open identity for a political movement than the word conservative is to, say, the Britain's Tories. There is no class system assumed in the word liberal. On the contrary, to become a first-time liberal voter, all you need do is shed your former Labor working-class identity. Howard never responds to Fraser directly. He won't give his former colleague the status that would be conferred by a counterattack. But Howard has dealt with Fraser's sledge that Menzies would not approve of the way the nation has been run today. The topic came up, interestingly enough, in a press conference the Prime Minister held in June 2005, after he had struck a deal on refugee detention policy with the government's self-styled minority, the so-called small L Liberals, led by Petro Georgiou, who perhaps, not coincidentally, is the local member for Menzies' old seat of Kooyong in Melbourne's Wealth Belt on the right side of the Yarra River. Here is the question and answer in that press conference so you can appreciate the context. The journalist began, Mr. Howard, some of your critics like to invoke Robert Menzies in this debate and argue that in his speeches and views on social justice that he might have had a different view to your own on the issue of immigration policy. What do you think of that? Mr. Howard replied, "Well, I think those sorts of comparisons are ludicrous. It's the equivalent of saying he was less liberal than I because he was Prime Minister at a time when we still had a White Australia policy." I mean, you respond to the circumstances of an age. I think those sorts of comparisons are unfair. I've always thought they were completely unfair, unfair to those of the past and to those of the present. The meaning of words change, as a society does. Liberalism was perhaps an easier virtue for Menzies to preach behind the tariff wall, in the days when most male workers clustered on the middle rung of the income ladder and the continental immigrants from southern and northern Europe happily took the jobs at the bottom. Menzies was a social liberal, but only up to a point. He effectively closed the chapter on sectarianism in 1964 when Catholic schools were granted state aid for the first time. But he also refused to countenance a change to the White Australia policy, as Howard noted in the press conference. It was left to Menzies' successor, Harold Holt, to begin to dismantle White Australia before Whitlam ended it for good in 1973. It was also left to Holt to establish the 1967 referendum which recognised Indigenous Australians as citizens. Judged by the standards of his time, Menzies was perhaps a reactionary on immigration and reconciliation. He retired from office in 1966. Menzies didn't worry about economic policy in his 16 years in power because he didn't have to. He was a conservative on this topic in the correct sense of the word because he thought there was no sense changing what seemed to work. Economic conservatives today are no longer in the mainstream. The deregulation model works so well in Australia that the public senses a return to protection would be akin to a form of political suicide. Those who think conservatively on the economy have little real power in Australia. Recall what happened to the nearly 1 million people who voted for Pauline Hanson's One Nation movement at the 1998 election. Hanson's three main gripes were Aboriginal welfare, Asian migration and competition policy. The Howard government replied by increasing the number of Asians coming here and continued to deregulate the economy. While economic conservatives are barely heard of anymore in public debate, the hard left, by contrast, has begun to embrace rational economics. The Green movement preaches economic solutions to water scarcity and to climate change. Conservatives, on the other hand, argue with little sympathy from the public that irrigators should get to keep their water licences or be paid huge sums to buy them out. Conservatives also call themselves sceptics on climate change. On this front, at least, Fraser is correct to call the Howard government conservative, even if it is behind public opinion on that issue. The schism between Fraser and Howard began with economics. It's important to recall this detail because the debate that follows tends to confuse people about what they're really arguing about. Fraser was a protectionist like Menzies. Howard was a deregulationist when it wasn't fashionable in the Liberal Party. Fraser blocked Howard's attempts as Treasurer to free up the financial system and to introduce a consumption tax in the early 1980s. On economic policy, Howard was and is an original Liberal, if Liberal is taken to mean a free trader. In the mid-1980s, Fraser's public gripe with Howard was that he was in cahoots with the Labor government of Bob Hawke and Paul Keating in opening up the economy to foreign competition and in selling off public assets. Howard, in turn, blamed Fraser for the 1982-3 recession that cost the Liberals government. It was only in 1988, when Howard, as opposition leader, called for the slowing in the Asian migration intake, that Fraser switched the critique from economic to social policy. Back then, it was Fraser who was on the right side of public and internal party opinion. Howard now admits that he lost the Liberal leadership in 1989 because of his stance on immigration. In the 1980s, being a Liberal politician meant being pro-Asian. Yet what is not widely understood about the Howard who returned to the Liberal leadership in 1995 is that he too became pro-Asian. His decade-plus term in power has vindicated this perhaps unfashionably Liberal reading of our Prime Minister. Let's play Count the Immigrant. It was the Howard government, not Hawke Keating Labor, that presided over the switch in the immigration program from Europe to Asia. When Howard took office in 1996, almost 60% of our overseas-born population was still European in its origin. Today, the majority of our immigrant population is non-European, comprising an eclectic mix of Asian, Kiwi, Pacific Islander and Middle Eastern-born Australians. The Howard of the new millennium wouldn't recognise his 1980s self because he has become more liberal on the regular immigration program than Menzies ever was. The real difference between Fraser and Howard has been on the treatment of boat people. Fraser allowed the Vietnamese wave to settle here ahead of public opinion in the second half of the 1970s. Howard, by contrast, turned back the Afghani and Iraqi waves from 2001 onwards and was validated by public opinion. The irony here, in case you haven't picked it up, is that Fraser was being more liberal than Menzies on asylum seekers. Menzies would surely have done a Howard and sent the Navy out to intercept the Vietnamese, because remember, Menzies wanted to keep Australia white. When Fraser cites Menzies to attack Howard on refugee policy, he is, in one respect, trying to rewrite history. John Howard is arguably the most successful centre-right politician in the Western world today. You'd have to go back two decades to Margaret Thatcher's reign in the UK and Ronald Reagan's in the US to find centre-right leaders who were more successful than our Prime Minister. By success, I mean not just the ability to win elections, but the power to shape a national conversation. Howard is consciously pro-Republican in respect to US politics, and with Tony Blair's departure from the Prime Minister's post in the UK, will become US President George Bush's final ally in Iraq. Yet liberal means something else again in the United States. This is another paradox that's worth pondering. It is an appellation of derision in the US. Liberty, mind you, is one of the three self-evident truths in Thomas Jefferson's Declaration of Independence, alongside life and the pursuit of happiness. All Americans believe in liberty. Bush invaded Iraq to promote liberty. Yet to Republicans, liberals are un-American because they elevate the rights of minorities above those of the 3G mainstream. By 3G, I mean Americans who love God, guns, and greed. The word liberal and elite are coupled by the US centre-right to describe the journalists, academic, and judges on the centre-left who would return America to the promiscuous 1960s, when people took off their clothes, burnt bras and draft cards, and sapped the national will to win the war in Vietnam. The centre-right in Australia, by contrast, has imported the US slur elite to describe its opponents here. They leave out the word liberal because that would confuse the masses. Australians don't hate liberals because they continue to elect liberal governments, at least in the federal arena. But equally, Australians aren't as divided as the Americans on matters of culture and society. We don't take the first G, God, as seriously as Americans and have no interest in guns. We may be greedy, but never in an American way. Australia is inherently more liberal than the US because it is less hung up. That's why the word has different meanings here. That's why, also, even after 11 years in power, John Howard hasn't changed the nation as much as it has changed him. This month's budget contains another clue to go with his earlier conversion on Asian migration. The past attempts to fiddle with a tax system to keep mum at home to raise young children have been abandoned. The budget contained new incentives for childcare, and the tax cuts were aimed at lower and middle income earners, which was code in budget speak for women who want to work part-time. To beat Howard today, Labor's Kevin Rudd tells journalists he is a fiscal conservative. Ironically, the economic press applauds the government for its big spending budget. Rudd, like Fraser, tries to use Menzies against Howard. The Labor leader's critique of the work choices legislation includes the anecdote that Menzies believed in trade unions. By siding with Menzies, Rudd seeks to claim a middle ground between Howard and Labor's former left-wing caricature. Interestingly, the economic commentariat and the business lobby doesn't buy the Rudd line because, unlike Menzies, they believe in deregulation. Here is perhaps the final irony in the contest over the words liberal and conservative. If Rudd wins the election, voters will have voted conservatively on the economy, which they do most times. Australia only changes government in recession or in its aftermath. The twist here is that the voters would be rejecting Howard because he was too liberal on economic policy. Surely Menzies would turn in his grave if Howard lost power at a time of roaring prosperity.
George Megalogenis. George is a senior writer for the Australian newspaper. He's written two books, The Longest Decade and Fault Lines, Race, Work and the Politics of Changing Australia. Both books are published by Scribe. Next week, Warwick Hadfield on the dark art of sledging on the sports field. That's all for Lingua Franca this week. Technical production was by Martin Lawrence. I'm Kate Bochner. Till next week.
Listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. all the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.